You can turn to the book of 2 Timothy, chapter 4. I'm going to begin by reading a few verses there. The title of my message this morning is Hot Tub Religion. Hot Tub Religion. Second Timothy, chapter 4, and verse 1. It says, I charge thee therefore before God and the Lord Jesus Christ, who shall judge the quick and the dead at his appearing in his kingdom. Preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. What I want to talk about this morning is pulling the plug on hot tub religion. And I realize that most of the churches in our fellowship do not buy into this thing that I'm calling hot tub religion. So perhaps a more appropriate beginning here would be that the Lord's churches need to keep the plug pulled on this hot tub religion. As we evangelize and maintain and as we build our churches. Now, it says there in verse 3, for the time will come. And I believe this time has come in America, has it not? Now, I know that every generation, if you ever read any sermons from antiquity, whether it's the early church fathers or even during the Reformation, you will see them talking about there's a falling away here and a falling away there. But what we see in America, I mean, going back no more than just 30 years ago is like nothing Christianity has ever seen. And I think to use a metaphor that would be very fitting here, what goes on in a lot of churches, and again, we're not talking about Baptist churches necessarily, but just so-called churches of various kinds and stripes, is what we can call hot tub religion. Now, I don't think I'm exaggerating when I say that it appears to me that most professing Christians, what they're looking for in a church is nothing more than a religious hot tub. That's what they want. When they go to church, they want to be able to sit back, relax, and enjoy the show and just feel really good about everything. We have today, and we get literature all the time at our church. There's Christian comedians. You can hire a Christian comedian to come in, advertise it, put it in a newspaper, and you will get a crowd. There's Muscleman people come in, do all these Muscleman things. There's converted mobsters and gang leaders will come in and tell about all the horrible things they used to do before the Lord saved them. And then there's a lot of celebrity Christians. And again, all of this goes with a little bit of a price tag. There's Christian athletes come in and, you know, they played ball for some team here, some whatever, and now they're a Christian. There's movie stars, and that usually gets out of our bracket, doesn't it? But hey, if you've got enough money, you can hire somebody to come in who everybody has seen on television. They'll come, talk for about 10, 15 minutes, and you'll give them a nice check. A lot of country music stars come in. If you got the money, well, I tell you what, you put some of these people on the marquee outside and you'll get a big crowd. Then, of course, there's always a lot of Christian politicians. They'll come, they'll talk, and maybe you get a crowd with them. In the 70s, when I was in Bible college, I went home for the summer. I was actually born and raised. Don't hold this against me, but I was born and raised in Chicago. And the pickings are pretty slim up in the Chicago area for a church. And so I settled for a church. I won't say what flavor it was. It was an independent. It was one of these independent Baptist churches. And they had something just about every single week. They had Old Fashioned Day one week. And I don't know if the pastor or the church paid to have all these antique cars line the parking lot. Everybody dressed up and, you know, bonnets, the ladies, and all this old fashioned kind of stuff. We had a parachute jump drop one time. The airplane flew over. Somebody jumped out. Never did. Had a big X on the parking lot. And this was going to be this, you know, drawing a big crowd. He missed it. We never did know what happened to the man. We had Senator Derwinski come and present a flag to the church one Sunday that had flown over the United Nations. There was constantly pie in the preacher's face. They would put a little bed sheet out in the front here. Anytime they broke the attendance record, they broke it by one. They would take a little pie tin, fill it up with whipped cream, and one of the little kiddies would splash it in the pastor's face, and that was always really good. And at that church, I actually heard an ex-Hell's Angel give his testimony. And I thought, this guy, he beat up, shot, cut. I mean, and you wouldn't believe the things this guy did. And I remember thinking to myself, if this guy has done half of what he said he did, he ought to be behind bars, not behind a pulpit. But this guy, by the way, he's still active. If you all want, I'll get you his phone number. I mean, he will come and he'll do this, and you'll put ex-biker or ex-Hell's Angel, in the paper, and there'll be people that'll come for that kind of thing. Now, let me make this clear. And that is, I am not saying that there is anything inherently wrong or inherently evil with these kinds of things. I mean, if they're maybe done properly. You know, if the Lord saves somebody who was notorious, and that person is now a member, a faithful member of the church, and that man wants to get up, or that woman, well, not woman, but that man wants to get up and give a testimony of how the Lord has saved them. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. If you have a Christian athlete, maybe plays for the university here, or maybe a politician, and that person, again, is a faithful member of the church, and they want to give a testimony. I don't think we have a problem with that kind of a thing. But what I do think is wrong is this whole trend of getting all these big names in and big people in. And you see, hot tub, that's hot tub religion. And it's all about making our church more interesting. About, you know, church work, the church service, more interesting and more appealing to the world. And really more appealing to lost church members. Listen, churches are getting full of lost people. You can't be a member of one of the Lord's churches unless you have been saved. Unless you can credibly attest that there has been a work of grace in your life. That you know the Lord has saved you. This isn't just walking down the church aisle and saying, well, I want to be a member. Are you saved? You know in your heart that you have been saved. Because other than that, you're not a proper candidate for baptism. And so, there's nothing wrong with somebody giving a testimony, but there's this whole movement of, see, let's outdo this church, let's outdo this church, and we're constantly doing things to make the church more entertaining. You know the way I see it, if the story of Christ and His power to save, if that doesn't interest somebody, we don't have anything else to offer you. We are not marketing Jesus Christ here in the church. We have a message, and that message is repent or perish. And this kind of stuff where it's like, you know, we're selling Jesus here and we're going to do everything we can to market Him. Listen, that's not even Christianity. You would rather see some big muscle man break a baseball bat over his head than to hear the Bible preached, to hear some story of the Bible taught. There's something wrong with you spiritually. I mean, we ought not to even want that kind of stuff in the church. And yet that's the kind of stuff that people are going to church for. That's hay, wood, and stubble. And that kind of stuff ought never to enter into the church. Listen, we are not selling Christ. And anybody that would rather, you know, goes to church for that reason or something spiritual, probably the person is not saved and does not know the Lord. Well, then it says in verse 3, it says that they will not endure sound doctrine. They will not endure sound doctrine. Now, Paul is prophesying that someday professing Christians will get tired of good old-fashioned sound doctrine and they'd want something else. And that's what we see today. You know, a lot of church-going people. Listen, they don't want old-time religion. They want hot tub religion. I mean, they're not interested in salvation and holiness. They want inner healing. They want support. They want psychology. They want self-help. And that's what the modern church is offering to a lot of people. That's what the modern church goer wants. Turn with me to Jeremiah chapter 6. I want you to see that this is not the first time. Our generation is not the first time this has happened. This is Jeremiah chapter 6 and one verse here, verse 16. This has happened before with people who profess to believe in God. Jeremiah chapter 6 and verse 16. This is the Lord speaking, and He says, thus saith the Lord, stand ye in the ways and see, and ask for the old paths, where is the good way, and walk therein, and ye shall find rest for your souls. And what does it say? What was their response? What were the people of God's response, or the people who professed to be the people of God? But they said, we will not walk therein. They didn't want the old ways. You see, this is several hundred years after the days of Moses. And guess what? People were tired of all that old-fashioned Judaism. The good stuff, the straight doctrine. And the message here in Jeremiah's day, because judgment is about to fall. Jeremiah preached for about 4 years, and then Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonians came, and they destroyed Jerusalem. And one of the messages of Jeremiah was, listen, seek and ask for the old paths, the old-fashioned stuff. And that's when you're going to find rest for your soul. But they said, we will not walk therein. And so I think we'd have to admit there's even a lot of Baptist folk today who they're saying the same thing. You know, we need something else, preacher. We're getting tired of this manna. We want something new. We want some hot tub religion. Well, also now in verse 3, if you want to turn back there, listen to what else it says in verse 3. It says, after their own lusts, and that word lust in the Bible simply means strong desire, is generally, because you find that sometimes in a good connotation. But it says, after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. So after their own desires, they're going to heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. Now they, here is referring to the professing Christians of this day. Heap means to pile up. And as you're going to find these ministers everywhere, and that's what we see in a lot of places today. And the itching ears, these are the ears of these professing Christians. These are these churchgoers. They got itching ears. And this is figurative language to say that the people have this itch. And they want the minister to scratch that itch. They got an itch about what they want to hear, what they want to experience when they go to church. And the kind of message and the kind of things that we do in church. And these preachers are going to give them what they want. And so these professing Christians that Paul is prophesying that's going to take place in the latter days, they're going to find ministers that will give them what they desire after their own lust. And again, that word lust, we usually use that in a sexual connotation, but in the Bible, the word lust is used more in just a general way for any kind of thing you might have a strong desire for. And in this case, that they got a strong desire for something more. They want some hot tub religion. Now, this kind of thing is done all the time in churches today. And what a lot of churches have done is they've hired a peddler. A lot of Christian churches, we're talking about the going under the banner of Christianity, we don't necessarily recognize them as a true church, but even some Baptist churches have fallen to this. But what they've done is that they have hired a peddler. And you know what a peddler's philosophy is? It's what the people want, the people get. The people say, well, church is boring. Have you ever heard anybody say that? I've heard plenty of people say that. Church is boring. Well, we haven't seen you in church for a long time. Well, church is boring. Well, the preacher peddler says, well, guess what? We'll give you some entertainment. We'll get some athlete in here to talk about something, and you know, the people say, "Well, the church is too strict." Ever heard that? I mean, if I had a dollar for everybody who came to my church, and it's not my church, but you know where I pastor, down through the years, I said, "Well, you guys are just a little bit too strict." You know, the preacher peddler says, "Hey, we'll lower our standard. We can't let people. We can't keep people from not coming. We can't." Can't get the boards out here right. We're not gonna hinder people from going to church because we're just a little bit too strict. Let's lower our standard. People say the church is too narrow doctrinally. Doctrine divides. Did you know that? Doctrine divides. So you know what the preacher peddler says? Well, let's do away with our doctrine. Let's soften this doctrine down. We're not gonna keep people out of church because of some dry, dusty, boring doctrine. Hey, the Bible teaches doctrine is important. Doctrine is what unites us. And so there's a lot of these preacher peddlers. Hey, whatever the people want, the people get. Listen, the main thing is what they say. We all love Jesus. We're all going to heaven. Now listen, there's more to it. Let me read from Isaiah, if you'd like to turn there with me. And I want you to see here again. This isn't our generation, what we're seeing today. This isn't the first time this has happened. In Isaiah, chapter 30 and verse 10. Isaiah chapter 30 and verse 10. Let's start in verse 8 here. It says, "Now go write it before them in a table," and that is on a little tablet, "and note it in a book, that it may be for the time to come forever and ever. That this is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of the Lord, which say to the seers," a seer is the old word for a prophet, a preacher as we would think of, "see not. And to the prophets," that is, they say to the prophets, "prophesy not unto us right things, speak unto us smooth things, prophesy deceits." Now, God is rebuking His people here for wanting the preacher to preach smooth things. We don't want to hear that old Bible stuff anymore. We want some smooth things. And listen, there is nothing smoother than a hot tub. I actually been in one once. I felt worldly. Listen, let me just tell you the story here. I was about that close, I think, to a nervous breakdown. And we went to a cabin way up in the mountains. And lo and behold, there's this tub outside. This is in the middle of, it was December, maybe it was February, I forget. It was cold outside. You could see your breath. And there's a hot tub out there. And I thought, well, there's nobody around. I'm going to just see what one of these things feel like. The water was about, 80 degrees or something. Press that button, all this water started shooting out. And I'm not into that kind of thing, but I have tried one. And I'll tell you this, there is nothing smoother than a hot tub. And that's what people want. They want smooth things. We don't want to hear the Bible anymore. We don't want good old-fashioned Bible teaching. We want smooth things. And you know what? You put the slightest little pressure on the modern churchgoer about living right, acting right, talking right, and they're out of here. We're out of here, preacher. I've had people talk to my wife. They'll see my wife someplace and say, "Well, if your husband doesn't quit harping on coming to church all the time, my family's going to leave." Well, I've never harped on anything. I mean, a preacher ought to exhort people. You know, if you're a Christian, you ought to want to be in church all three times the doors are open. A special service, if you can. If you're able to get up and get out and there's nothing else that absolutely hinders you from coming. And I don't think any preacher just harps on that kind of thing. But people say, hey, you start talking about living right and doing right. Guess what? I was going through the book of Genesis one time and I was just preaching on Noah getting drunk. I didn't even know what I was talking about. I mean, a lot of times I don't know what I'm talking about, but I didn't realize there were some drinkers in the church. And I just started talking about how awful that was for Noah to get drunk. Come to find out, there were some people in my church drinking. I mean, not getting drunk, not doing it publicly. And I just started saying, listen, if you drink, you ought not to be singing in the choir. If you drink, you ought not to be teaching a Sunday school class. You can't even be a member of this church. Because our church is a teetotaler church. We don't drink. We have covenanted together that we will abstain from the use of alcohol. And before I know it, there was about 18 people left the church. And I had no idea. I mean, I did have a couple of little hints when little Johnny one time said, "My daddy's got beer in the refrigerator," and his bigger sister started smacking him. Shut up! So I had a little bit of a hint, but again, I wasn't going snooping around spying, and the Lord took care of that. And again, you're gonna trade a beer for the Lord's house, and those people left and went to a church that we wouldn't recognize as a true New Testament church. You're gonna trade alcohol for the Lord's church? Something wrong there. You see, people want smooth things. They don't want right things. They don't want to hear the Bible. They want to have smooth things. And you know, the preacher peddler is very careful not to say anything that's going to offend anybody. I mean, that's the one thing. You preach about sin. Oh, that preacher, he'll get up, talk about how bad sin is. He'll never name sin, what he's talking about. Hey, analyze some of the preaching you hear maybe on the radio. And I tell you, oh, sin is bad, sin is this, sin is that. But they never tell you what they're talking about. I can preach on sin until I'm blue in the face. I can scream about how bad sin is. And guess what? You'll never feel guilty about any bad habit, bad thing in your life. Because it's always the guy behind you. That's Sister Sally back there. She's guilty of that gossip. or so-and-so for those cigarettes that he smokes or she smokes. And so, yeah, you can preach about sin all you want, but when you start naming what you're talking about, now that's when it starts getting a little bit uncomfortable and people say, you know what? It's time for a business meeting. We got to get rid of that preacher. He's putting too much pressure on us. Now, note what it says here in verse 4. It says that they shall turn away their ears from the truth. Paul is prophesying about a time in the future that these people, they're going to heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. They're going to give the people what they want. And the people will turn away their ears from the truth. Now, you can't deny that that's happening. I mean, if you have any perception whatsoever what's going on in the religious realm today, what we think of as in Christianity or Christendom, I mean, who cares about truth? When was the last time you met somebody, a churchgoer from whatever denomination, that cares about truth? Now, if there's a Pentecostal here or a Charismatic, I don't mean to offend you, but the Pentecostal, they're saying there's this great revival going on. Well, you know what? They're not interested in truth. There's no revival without truth. Hey, when the Reformation took place, those people were interested in studying their Bibles and finding thus saith the Lord. And a lot of them came out of the corrupt Catholic Church. Some of them didn't come all the way out. But you can't have revival without truth. But who cares about truth? You know, the average preacher doesn't care about truth. Listen, the average pastor today, and some of them are female, and you can't be a pastor and be a female, they're so interested in building that mega church. This great big church that has something for everybody. Listen, if you're going to build a big church like that, you got to hand out truth in little tiny thimblefuls. Because you can't give people too much. Because people don't want to hear that. They want smooth things. The average churchgoer doesn't want a lot of truth, do they? And they want to find a church where a lot of things for the kids. We've got to have the joggers for Jesus. You know, if you're a jogger, oh yeah, we jog every Saturday. We're joggers for Jesus. The average person wants a church that won't make them feel too uncomfortable in their sins. Well, we understand the preacher's got to preach a few things, step on a few toes, but we don't want anybody that's going to really make us feel real uncomfortable by not living right and doing right. Now let me turn somewhere here, 2 Thessalonians, if you'd like to turn there. A lot of people get a little nervous over these verses. And I don't think you ought to ever get nervous over anything in the Bible. This is 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. And my point here is how important truth is. If you are not a lover of truth, you're in trouble. You are in trouble. Look at what it says here. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2. 2 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 10. It says here, this is speaking with the coming of the Antichrist, which is not too far down the road, it doesn't seem like. It says, and with all deceivableness of unrighteousness in them that perish, and that's eternal damnation there, because they receive not the love of the truth that they might be saved. And for this cause, God shall send them, these people that don't care for the truth, strong delusion that they should believe a lie. That they all, these all the people that don't care about the truth, that they might be damned, who believe not the truth, but had pleasure in unrighteousness. Now, a lot of people get nervous over that and say, you mean God is going to send these professing Christians delusion, somehow mislead them when the time of the Antichrist is coming on? That's what it's saying. Now, you can downplay that. You can twist it around any way you want. A lot of people, oh, that's something. You're making like God sounds bad. Listen, God is truth. If you don't like truth, you don't like God. God is veracity. And God, these so-called Christian people who go to church and want to play church, but they don't want truth, and if their minister got up and started preaching a little truth, they'd say, we're getting rid of Brother Bob. He's not going to preach that kind of stuff here. Listen, God's going to send you strong delusion. God doesn't owe anybody anything who practices religion in His name without truth. Truth is so important. And go back and read that verse a little bit. Listen, we're going to come down to a very serious time. And all these so-called, this is what I think it's talking about. When the Antichrist comes on the scene, everybody's going to think that's Christ come. I mean, the Antichrist is coming as someone who is against Christ, but he's also coming in the place of Christ. And the world is going to, the Christian world is going to bow down because they don't know enough theology to recognize that this is not Jesus coming back. The Jews are going to fall for it. The Muslims are they're thinking that he's the 12th Imam or the Mahdi who is returning. And the world is going to fall for the Antichrist. And it's these and on the Christian area of this, it's people who do not love the truth. You know, there's a well-known preacher whose motto today is deeds, not creeds. Maybe you know who I'm talking about there. And you know, the religious world, boy, they just laugh that kind of stuff. That's like ice cream to them. Deeds, not creed. We don't want creeds because creed has to do with truth. Listen, I assure you that if your creed isn't right, your doctrine isn't right, there's not much of anything else that you're going to do for the Lord that is going to be right. Now, we believe in deeds, but we don't say deeds to the exclusion of creeds. Creed being a Bible teaching. You know, when it comes to the Lord's work, it's all about truth, doctrinal truth. You can't even have a worship service without truth. John 4:24 says they worship God, must worship Him in spirit and in truth. These people think, we'll just all get together. Let's rent a storefront. Let's go out to the woods someplace. We're going to worship God. Listen, you got to worship God in truth, spirit and in truth. And these churches that don't care about truth, they think they're doing all these great things. They're hooping and hollering, we love Jesus. Listen, God doesn't accept that kind of worship. Because worship has to be done in truth. And you build your church, like these people are doing, their so-called churches, on man-made doctrines, and everything you practice is something that is you can't find a chapter and verse in the Bible. It is vain. Jesus said, in vain do they worship me, teaching for doctrines the commandments of men. And anything that is vain is useless. It is empty. It is worthless. And again, when it comes to serving the Lord, it's not just what you do, it's how you do it, why you do it, and all those other kinds of things. And then in verse 2 of our text, let me turn back there. Listen to what Paul says here. He's basically telling Timothy, don't scratch that itch, Timothy. He says, preach the word, be instant in season, out of season, reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long suffering and doctrine. And that would translate simply into, listen, don't scratch that itch. Yeah, they're going to heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. They're going to want peddlers who'll teach and give them whatever they want to do. But listen, Timothy, you reprove those people. You reprove people in the last days, which we, you know, Timothy didn't know at what time this was really going to have an effect, but certainly all generations have seen some of this. You rebuke. You know, a pastor gets up today in one of these modern churches and starts rebuking the people, and guess what? He'll be looking for another church. You can't do it. We can rebuke because we know what we're supposed to hear that. And if you get mad at the pastor when he rebukes you, maybe not. We're not saying, now, Brother Bob, is there any Bobs here? Well, is there any Bobs that smoke? Smoking's a bad habit. Now, it would be wrong for me as a pastor, Brother Bob, you ought to quit them nasty cigarettes. Now, that would be wrong. But to get up and preach the Bible, to teach the Bible, you ought not to get mad at the man of God for doing that. That's what we get paid for, if you want to put it that way. We are to reprove, rebuke, and exhort, to encourage everyone to live better and to do better. And so Paul here is saying that to Timothy, Lord has revealed to him that there is a coming day when professing Christians are not going to want old-time religion. They're going to want hot tub religion. And he's saying, Timothy, don't give it to them. Don't you fill that tub. You keep that plug pulled, Timothy. And I think when we feel conformed, even as a church, a lot of churches, you know, they're not happy. Church people aren't happy. I mean, I've been in churches where somebody's like, where is everybody? And I've, to my knowledge, I've never been rude, but you know what I feel like saying to somebody? Well, how many people did you visit this week? How many people did you invite? How many people did you try to win to the Lord this week? And there's people, and so a lot of people, they want something bigger. They want to be the highest, have the highest steeple in the community. And so, and when we feel, because we certainly want growth. Every church wants to see people saved and baptized and to see the church growing. But when we feel tempted, we feel pressure, well, you know, we're just a small church, and look at all these churches they're building, they're always adding on and whatever. We need to come back and read these verses right here. Because this is what we're talking about in the last days. You know, these are some of the last words the Apostle Paul ever wrote. As far as we know, this is the very last letter that he wrote before he was executed. Under Nero. Now, just very quickly, let's go to the book of Ezekiel, if you would. The book of Ezekiel, chapter 22. And just one verse here. And again, these prophets were all to the nation of Israel. He says here, her priests, Ezekiel 22, verse 26, her priests, that is the religious leaders, have violated my law and have profaned my holy things. They have put no difference between the holy and the profane. Neither have they shown difference between the unclean and the clean, and have hid their eyes from my Sabbaths, and I am profaned among them. But they have put no difference between the holy and the profane. And isn't that what these preachers are doing today? All this church playing that's going on. I mean, people just, anything for a crowd. We get the muscle men, the gangsters, all these things we've been talking about. And I saw a billboard coming in. It was this young couple. And it's like, it's just the wrong message. They're advertising themselves. Maybe you saw that billboard here at some faith church or something. Hey, we've got really something to teach you here. And look, we're real attractive. I'm real whatever. My wife's real pretty. You just come on. And they're advertising themselves. And their ministry. And that's not what this is all about. That's not what Christianity is all about. And so preachers today involved in this hot tub religion, they put no difference between the holy and the profane, the secular and the sacred. You know, churches that practice hot tub religion, what they've done is they've taken the church, which is a religious institution. Now, there's a social aspect here. We have dinners, we make church picnics, maybe church goes together to some... A lot of people go down there to see the Creation Museum and things. I mean, we do things like that. But what they've done is they've taken a sacred institution and they've turned it into a quasi-religious institution. It's more of a civil and a social institution. And we need to keep the church separated from the world. And that's why when you start trying to compete with the world with entertainment, do you realize what these people are doing? Listen, the church is up here. And if you think you're going to compete with all the glitz that's out there in the world because you've got some fancy singer, country music star coming to your church. I mean, listen, you are lowering the work of God. You know, the church is to be holy. We're to be separated from the world. That's why when we come to church, we ought to dress differently than we do when we're out in the world. I'm not saying you have to have a suit and tie on. But when we come here, listen, all this is come as you are stuff. You know, that's what the modern church, yeah, you can wear your blue jeans with big old rips and cuts in it, and you women can wear your immodest apparel and whatever, just come as you are. Listen, there is no place for that in the Lord's church. This is where God meets with us. This place ought to be different than any other, the way we dress, the way we talk, the music that we sing here, and all this modern stuff that's gotten into the church. I mean, there really is no place. I think, give or take a note or two, I think all music ought to pass the jig test that we sing in the church. Now, you might listen to something on the radio, maybe some Christian music, that's between you and the Lord. I don't listen to any of that. But this kind of stuff where you just feel like jigging. We went to visit my mother, who lives up in Michigan, and we spent the night. We left about 8 o'clock in the morning. We stopped off at a church. It was the only church, you know, looked like a reasonable church. And man, these people were jigging. I mean, this music was playing, and they're doing all that kind of stuff. And I looked over at my wife, looked at my son, my daughter, and their families. They're all with us. And I started to say, "I'm out of here." But I just thought, you know, I don't want to make a scene. And so we stayed. And of course, it was mostly fluff. It wasn't really any Bible teaching. The pastor, he was a good musician. I never heard a guitar sound so good. And I said to him, I said, "What kind of guitar was that?" Because he was up there playing the thing. And he told me it cost like $8,000 or something. That's what I pay for my car. But I never heard a guitar. But that's the thing. That's the kind of stuff they use to appeal to the world. And so we need to put and always keep a difference between the profane and the secular. Most people don't like what we're doing here. Church is all about singing, preaching, and praying. And that's what we have to mark. We have a message, the Word of God. We have the pulpit in the middle of the church. Why? Because this is what it's all about. If you've come here for any other reason, except maybe if you're here with your girlfriend, because sometimes you might go to church with your girlfriend, but other than that, I'm trying to be funny, nobody's laughing, but you're not here for the right reason, and you need to get your heart right. Very, very quickly, go with me, if you would, to 1 Corinthians chapter 3. A lot of people drive by a church like this and think, well, I know they used to say that about every church I've ever pastored. Well, they're trying over there, but they're sure not doing. They haven't built on or added or anything. It's like they have no idea that God looks down from heaven. He's smiling what we're doing here. Yeah, we listen. You may never have the highest steeple. You may never have be able to say, well, we got 10,000 members, and well, you may never buy some stadium, like some of these churches do, but they don't preach the. Can you imagine? I mean, why this comes to my mind. I'm thinking of this man who they bought a football stadium or something. And, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people come here, and he doesn't believe in preaching damnation. I watched this guy on television. He says, listen, I think it was Larry King. He said, the Lord hadn't called me to preach that. The man said, well, you don't preach like Billy Graham. Billy Graham was always warning people about dying without the Savior. He says, well, no, that's not my message. God has called me to preach a message of hope, and you can do it. And listen, can you imagine people who die as a member of that denomination, that church, thinking, my goodness, this man, and they're flying into the flames of hell, and they're thinking their minister never warned them. All he did was make me feel good, like the choo-choo who could do it. Up the hill, I can do it. I can become anything I want. I can get rich. And your minister never warned you that you needed a Savior. You die without Christ. There is no hope for you. You can't save yourself. Can you imagine going to a denomination like that? Oh, yeah, you're on television. Everybody's heard of your pastor, and he's written more books than most preachers, but he's never warned me. I mean, what a travesty in the name of Christ. And that kind of thing is happening all over the place. In 1 Corinthians chapter 3, and I'll close with this, a couple of verses here. Look what it says here about church building. I may preach a message this week. I don't know if I have it with me, and I studied it a little bit last week, the last couple of weeks in preparing and coming. But in chapter 3, verse 8. It says, now he that planteth and he that watereth are one, and every man shall receive his own reward according to his own labor. Now, that's talking about all the members of this church. The application now applying probably more so to Brother Reynolds and other the men who are in leadership position of the church. He says, for we are laborers, verse 9, together with God. Ye are God's husbandry. Ye are God's building. According to the grace of God which is given unto me, as a wise master builder, I have laid the foundation, and another buildeth thereon. Now here's the warning. But let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man, that would be every man and woman who's a member of this church, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire, and the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is. Any man's work abide, which he hath built thereupon, he shall receive a reward. Any man's work shall be burned, he shall suffer loss, but he himself shall be saved, yet so as by fire. But the second part of verse 10 there, the last part, now, let every man take heed how he buildeth thereupon. Now, Christ is the foundation of the church, but we are to take heed how we build. We can't just do anything. I'm speaking as if I were a member here. We can't just do anything we want to do here. We can't just preach what we want to preach. The preacher can't even preach. He's got some kind of hobby horse, and some preachers get on that. They got one or two subjects that they want to preach about instead of preaching the whole counsel of God. You can't do that. We got to preach the Bible, preach the Word, as we read there in 2 Timothy. And so as we evangelize and we attempt to build our church, we have to go by the blueprint of this book. And these preachers say, you know what? This doesn't work. I'm not getting enough results. We got to do something else here. We got to get more people down the aisle. We got to get more people in the baptistry. Listen, that is not what we're doing here, and that is not what we ought to be doing. And when you start doing that kind of stuff, your works are going to be burned up. I don't know about you, but when I get to heaven, I've worked hard. I mean, to the best of my ability as a Christian. I don't want to find out that everything I did or a lot of what I did just burned up. I'm not going to get any credit. I mean, I've tried to serve the Lord for 37 years since He has saved me, and because, you know, I was just interested in making a big institution for myself. A lot of preachers get these, man, I want a big church. You know, the first church I pastored had about 60 people in it. My dad, who is a lost man, died lost. He said, you know, that's a good start. Got out of Bible college. That's a good start. But he said, you know what? Get a little practice. Get yourself a bigger one. And that's how the world looks at that. It's like, well, I don't want a bigger one. In fact, I actually enjoy the smaller ones better. But that's how the world looks at it. And we can't just do whatever we want to do here. And I will close with this. Look here in verse 2 of chapter 4, if you are still there in 1 Corinthians. It says, moreover, it is required in stewards that a man be found faithful. You know, that's all we have to do, is be faithful. Be faithful in preaching the Bible. You as an individual member, you be faithful in witnessing to your family, witnessing to your friends, your co-workers. Pass out a tract, invite people to church, give your own testimony. I think that's kind of lacking today, is it not? Listen, I don't have a real spectacular testimony when the Lord saved me, but guess what? I can tell you how the Lord saved me. I can tell you when He saved me. I can tell you that He has saved me, and you ought to be telling that to people. And say, hey, I don't know if you know this or not, but Christianity is not just religion. This is, you become a new creature in Christ. I am not the same Bill Van Noonan I was when I was 21 years old. The Lord saved me. There's a change in my life, and it's wonderful. It is wonderful to come to know Christ. So if all you have is religion, that's not good enough. That won't even get you to heaven. And so we need to be faithful. Come to church, support missionaries, support the pastor, do all that we can to reach out in our community for the Lord. And guess what? That's all we can do. We can't make people get saved. It's not in our power. All we can do is plant and water. And we have to leave the results to God. And so may God give us grace to strive lawfully, to help us to keep that plug. Now, I don't know if, you know, I grew up with bathtubs with plugs in them. So that's what I'm talking about, pulling the plug. I know they got levers and gizmos today, but I'm thinking that big old chain going on that big old rubber plug. Keep that plug pulled. And if you get some people in this church, hey, let's fill this tub up a little bit. Let's get some nice hot water going. No, we're keeping the plug pulled on this hot tub religion stuff. Because that is not how we are to build the church. And may God give us the grace to do that. Brother Reynolds.